So we're holding on page Chaf Vav in Megillah, about 4 or 5 lines from the bottom, middle of a very long ois over here, which is ois Chaf Dalet. Okay, we got up to where Haman is getting Mordechai up onto the horse. We said that Mordechai even kicked him. So now the Gemara continues. Pasuk says, "Vayikru lefanav kacha ya'asal ish." So Haman is leading Mordechai in the street and calling out in front of him, "This should be done to the man that the king wants to honor." As he was holding the reins and going along on the Bishvila de Masa would be on a street in the city. Bishvila de Bei Haman would be specifically the street passing by Haman's house. His daughter, who was standing on the roof, saw what's going on down below. Sabra, she thought, she thought the one riding on the horse must be her father. And she thought the one who's leading him is Mordechai. After all, Haman had gone that morning to ask Achashverosh for permission to hang Mordechai. So she figured that she jumped to conclusions and figured Achashverosh must have given permission, and now Mordechai is being degraded before he's going to be taken to be hanged. Ben Yehoyada points out that they may both have had, first of all, I mean, I guess you could say Balabata, she's watching from the roof, so she may not be able to see their faces because she's looking downwards. But Ben Yehoyada points out that Mordechai had his head down a little bit, especially he's still in the middle of his fast, after all, and Haman certainly did because he didn't want everybody to see his bazillion, so therefore all the more reason Shitaka couldn't see either of their faces. As far as Haman's voice, Ben Yehoyada points out, with him going all over town and yelling, "Kocha Yosel Ish," his voice must have been hoarse enough by now that she couldn't recognize his voice. Anyway, so shoklat sitza de beis hakis. But kind of the igra means she was standing on the roof. Yeah, igra means the roof. Yeah, like the igra rom lebeira amikse. Yeah. So shoklat sitza de beis hakis b'shad yalei areshi. She took a chamber pot and threw it on his head, davu on her father's head. You know, we always teach our kids that she threw down garbage on him, but we look in the Gemara over here. It wasn't garbage. It was something a lot worse. Eitz Yosef, by the way, brings a cute idea in this connection. The Targum on Megillah mentions, back when we learned before that Memuchan, where we had the opinion in the Gemara that Memuchan Zehaman was the one who gave the advice to get rid of Vashti, and afterwards now they're having the whole beauty contest with all the girls brought. Haman, the same daughter of Haman, he of course tried to put her forward as a candidate as well. The Eibishter made that all of a sudden she got a terrible case of diarrhea, so they didn't want her around. So now, even years later, then she still has a chamber pot at the ready all the time, and therefore she has it immediately available now for this purpose. Dolly Eine, so Haman looked up to see who did that. Bechazia, and he saw her. Even to Chazoy da Abuahavi, when she saw it was her father, Nafla Me'igro Mesa, she fell off the roof. She fell or jumped, whatever, off the roof in shock. Umesa, and she died. Thus the Pasuk says, Vayoshav Mordechai al Shar HaMelech. So it says in the Pasuk, Mordechai returned to the king's gate. Now, what does he mean? What do you mean returned? He returned to his sackcloth and his fasting. Meaning, in other words, Marashah says, it didn't need to say by Yoshev. It means, in other words, that he was still El Shar HaMelech and not in the Shar HaMelech, because it says earlier in the Megillah, when a person is wearing Sak Ve'efer, then he doesn't go into Shar HaMelech. So the fact that it says that he went El Shar HaMelech suggests that he still couldn't go in. Why? Because he went back to his Sak V'tainus. It's Yosef points out over here, we discussed earlier what the 3 days were that they were fasting. One way of looking at it is the 3 days they were fasting was Yudalib Tesvav Teszayin. All this took place on Teszayin because that was the day Haman was hanged. So according to that, then Attaka was still in the middle of the 3 days. So now Mordechai goes back to finish off the fast. On the other hand, Eitz Yosef brings, one second, Eitz Yosef brings that another possibility that we discussed before, that the 3 days may have been Yudgimel Yudalib Tesvav. If so, then on Tes Zayin now, the fast is technically already over. Why is he returning with Saka with Tani? So he says, because maybe I'll derech like you have by fasts for rain, which we'll talk about in a few weeks, Bez Hashem and Masech Tainis, where you have the Yechidim fast even when the Tzibur is not. So the same way over here, even the Tzibur is not fasting any more than 3 days, because at that point it would be Exeter Shein Reva Tzibur Yechol Mamed, but Mordechai may have been machmer on himself to continue fasting until they get a sign, Min HaShemayim, that the Exeter has actually been canceled. What were you going to say?
No, I said the Moach Sholis that I left that he had, not real.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And I was on the horse, 2 minutes after, he was putting his...
Yeah, that's how it is. So, and then the pasuk continues, "V'homon nidchaf abesoi." Then the pasuk continues, "Homon was pushed to his house, although v'hafui rosh, he was mooning and with his head covered." Now, the word mooning doesn't suggest that. Now, everything that just happened to him is a reason for him to be upset and whatever, but not mooning, which suggests an actual tragedy that happened to him. So that's Ovo Albito. He was in mourning for his daughter who had just committed suicide, and he had his head covered in embarrassment, from what just happened to him, the whole thing with leading around Mordechai and having this chamber pot thrown on his head. The pasuk continues, "Vayisaper Haman lezeresh ishto v'gomer." Then the pasuk says Haman told over to his wife Zeresh and to his friends what happened over here. And the pasuk doesn't. Now before it calls them oyhavav. So the Gemara asks, "Maishna hosim dekorilahu oyhavav?" In Perek Hey, when he asks them advice what to do about Mordechai, and they tell him build the gallows, it calls him oyhavav. Here, "Maishna hocha dekorilahu chacham." Why over here, when he tells them what happened, and they tell him im mizera hayehudim Mordechai, then it calls it instead chacham. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan and Malamed, this teaches us shekola omer dvar chokma afila ba'ov dekachavim. Anyone who says a matter of chokma, even from among the goyim, nikra chacham, deserves to be called a chacham. So here, where they're telling him, Marsha explains, particularly mean the ultimate chokma is the chokma of the Torah. And what they're telling him is correct, Alpi Torah, as they're going to continue telling him that if Mordechai is from one of certain Shvatim, then you, Haman, are not going to be able to defeat him. That's correct, Alpi Torah. Therefore, they deserve to be called Chachamim for coming up with that concept. Because first they didn't realize, they knew before, as we're going to explain in a second, that Mordechai was a Yid. They didn't realize what Shevet he's from. Now they're telling him, Im Mizera Ayehodim, the Gemara is going to explain in a second. By the way, this connects with today's Shlosha Parakim of Rambam. Today we have the Rambam starts talking about Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, and famously he says the vort that a person, a Ben Noach, has to keep them because the Eivishter said so, because the Eivishter gave them through Moshe Rabbeinu, and not because he comes up with it on his own. And if he comes up with it on his own, you have two different Gersois in Rambam. One is that the Rambam writes, he's not from Chassidu Omos Ha'olam. Then you have two different Gersois. Does the Rambam say, V'loi Mechach Mehem, he's also not one of their wise ones, because to be a wise person, he would have to be doing it for the correct reason, or is the correct Gersa Ella Mechach Mehem. However, he can still be called a wise guy for coming up with these concepts on his own. So that would fit with our Gemara over here. Kola Omer Dvar Chochma, if he comes up with this Dvar Chochma of that we have to keep the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, he's doing it for the wrong reasons because he doesn't recognize that the Eivishter gave it through Moshe Rabbeinu, but nevertheless he can deserve to be called a Chochma for that, according to that Gersa. Okay. So they tell him, im mizera hayehudim Mordechai Gomer. So they tell him, if Mordechai is from the seed of the Jews. Now, what does that mean? Everybody knows already that he's a Jew, right from the beginning of the Megillah already. Ish yehudi hoya b'shushan abira. So it means, omrulay, it means they're telling him, within the Jews themselves, there are different seed, different descendants, where some of them you might be able to overcome, but some not. Im mishar shivti Yisrael ka'asi, if Mordechai descends from any shevet except for the ones that we're going to list, yachaltalei, then you will be able to overcome him. Im mishevet Yehuda, Menashe, Ephraim, Binyamin ka'asi, but if he comes from any one of these four shvatim, lo yachaltalei, then you will not be able to overcome him. And why is that? Yehuda dichtiv yodcha b'orefei vecha. Yehuda was given a bracha by Yaakov. Your hand will be on your enemies, on the back of your enemy's neck. Oref is the back of the neck. Meaning, in other words, that Yehuda will be able to overcome and overpower his enemies. The idea being, in other words, like the enemies will be afraid and they'll run away and they'll have the backs of their necks turned towards you and you'll still be able to chase after them and defeat them. Ephraim of Binyamin and Manasseh dichtiv. You have a pasuk in Tehillim. Lifnei Ephraim of Binyamin and Manasseh oras burasecha. Before those three shvatim, we ask Hashem, arouse your strength. Ulachol yishu asalanu. And it is for you. The word lachol we hear many mafoshim on the pasuk explain doesn't mean and go like lachol doidi, but rather it's another form of the word lachol to you. And for you, it is up to you, lishu asalanu, to save us. So the point we see that the save Hashem saving us is associated particularly with the Shvatim Ephraim, Binyamin, and Manasseh. So therefore, to begin with, when they advised them to make the gallows, so they figured that Mordechai might be from some other Shevet. Now that they see the beginning of Haman's downfall, Marsha explains, now they've second-guessed themselves and they realize, maybe after all, Mordechai is from one of those four Shvatim, and in that case, then you're a goner.
I knew how to learn those days.
Yeah, So, and they continue. They tell him ki nafal tibor lefonav. They tell him that. And the Rif points out, by the way, we see that Yehuda had defeated Esav back in the day. You have famously that Choshen ben Dan stunned him by the whole thing with Yaakov going to be buried. That Esav came and tried to prevent it, and Choshen gave him a zetz and then stunned him, and then Yehuda finished him off. And as far as Binyamin, we find that they were the ones Shaul had almost wiped out Amalek. So those Shvatim have particular power against Haman and Kaman. And they continued. They told him that if this keeps up, if he is from those Shvatim, he nafal tibor lefonav, falling, you will fall in front of him. Worth mentioning in this connection, by the way, a chassidish ma'aseh, they tell about the Koshnitz Magid, that one time they says that Napoleon came to his shul to ask for a bracha in his campaign in Russia. They were reading the Megillah over then. They got to this pasuk. So the Koshnitzer reads, "Ki napol tipo lefonav, napol like Napoleon tipo, you will fall." So he didn't get the bracha that he wanted. As a zokman amaisa, whether it's historically true, I don't know if Napoleon was actually in Koshnitz at that time when Purim time, but that's the way the maisa goes. Anyway. It's ki nafal tipo lefonav dorash Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Loi shtei nefilos elu lama. Why are they using this expression, falling you will fall? Melamed sh'amru loy, it teaches us that they were telling him, umazu m'shulo la'ofer m'shulo la'kechavim. This nation, the Jewish people, is compared to the dust, and it's also compared to the stars. Shein yodin yodin at ofer. When they go down, when they're going in a descending situation, they go all the way down to the dust. Ukshein ulin, and when they go up, ulin l'rakia or ad l'kechavim, they go all the way up to the heaven or all the way up to the stars. So the dust everybody can trample on. On the other hand, nobody can ever possibly get to the stars. So the same way, when they're on the upswing, then no nation can have any control over them. And that's so now you see already that Mordechai is starting to dominate over Haman. And they're telling him if he is in fact from one of those four shvatim, then it's not just a fluke. It's going to continue going that way, and he's going to go higher and higher. So that's the thing. They didn't know before that he was from one of these four shvatim. Even now, they don't know for sure. They're saying if they had time, as it is, the Megillah is going to point out, as the Megillah points out, as the Gemara is next going to bring, that they hastened Haman, they rushed Haman to come to the palace for Esther's second party. If he had had more time, one of the things he might have done, they might have started doing some research and to find out what Shevet Mordechai is from. And then there's a lot of possibilities. Some of Foshim point out that they would have had time maybe to dismantle the gallows. Like this, you have the gallows is still standing over there when Charvona tells Achashverosh about it, and he says, Tzluhu Olav. If he had had more time, he might have taken that down. He might have gone and asked Mordechai for Mechila. He might have done all kinds of things like this. In the end, he didn't have a chance for all of that because the Eibishter just arranged that they came and rushed him to the party, and he had no time to carry out any of his possible plans or plots, including also he and his wise men might start plotting against Ahasuerush to save him, whatever. So like this, he had no time for any of that in the end. So the pasuk continues, Oidim medabrim imoy, they're still talking with him. And the king's servants came and brought him to the party. And the expression is Vayavilu Lahobias Hama. So that means Malamad Shehivu Bivahola. It means that they brought him in a rush, which Rashi says he didn't even have the time to wash off the filth that his daughter had thrown on him. So that's the point is, Maharsha says, because if it, like this, Udiyu you have, Vayyama Malach Maharu es Haman. So why by the second time, why doesn't it say Vayyamaharu es Haman or something to that effect? Why instead Vayyavhilu es Haman? It means that they brought him really, not the word Behola means not only quickly, it also means in a panic. It means they brought him, they ordered him to come so quickly that he was in a panic. What am I going to do? So, and still he had no choice but to come. Other Mephoshim point out different angles about it. Why Vayavhilu? Why not Vayavahalu, for example, which would be the normal way of saying to make him hurry up. Vayavhilu, therefore, is a form of the verb that also means to terrify him and to put him in a panic. So it means that. Next, so they come to the party, and Achashverosh asked Esther, so what do you want? She answers, Kinim Kanu Ani Va'ami, etc. She says, Ki Einat Sor Shoiva B'Nezek HaMelech. She says, the enemy, the adversary, is not even worth it for the damage of the king. Rashi explains shava means choshish. Earlier we had by Haman's accusation when he said v'lamelech in shoyva lahanicham. So Rashi had explained similarly. It's not even worth worrying about whether it's worthwhile to keep them. You shouldn't worry about it. It's not worth it. Now she's turning that word shava around on Haman and saying he's not even choshish. He's not even concerned about the damage that he's causing to the king. Now, what does that mean? She says, "Ikani baba Vashti b'kotla." Previously, he caused you to get angry at Vashti, and he caused her to get killed. Hashti ikani b'didi. Now he's trying to provoke you against me, ovoy mikli, and he wants to kill me also. So, in other words, she's saying that now you know for the first time that I'm a Jewish woman. Now you should realize, therefore, that that's why is he plotting against all us Jewish people? Because he wants to get rid of me the same way as he got rid of Vashti. That's part of what provoked Haman. That's part of what provoked Achashverosh's anger so much. Me, who's Ev Ezahu, who would dare to start up with the queen? That he should start up with the Jews. That maybe Achashverosh doesn't mind. We said before he was a bigger Rosha than Haman, but that he should start up with the queen. That already gets his attention. Next, the pasuk continues. Vayomer Hamelach Achashverosh Vayomer LaEsther Amalka. Why the Vayomer twice? And this is what the Gemara is going to answer over here. By the way, it's brought in Midrashim in various other contexts. You have different other places in Tanakh where you also have a Vayomer and followed by another Vayomer, or Vaidaber followed by another Vaidaber or whatever, without anything in between, and always there's a drasha. So here, Amar Rabbi Lot, Amar Rabbi Liezer, Rabbi Bahu, Betchila Aide Turgamon. What happened was, previously, Achashverosh had been talking to her through an interpreter, meaning because he figured she's a nobody. I don't know what family she's from. She's not of my caliber. She's not from royal blood. So why should I talk to her directly? So he would always, like out of gaiva, only talk to her through an interpreter. Now she's telling him, I'm from royal blood, I descend from Shaul HaMelech, Ishtoi Miyad Bahadra. Then he speaks directly to her without the material. There was actually an, now he knows for the first time that she's Jewish. Yeah, that's part of what she told him. Yeah. There is actually an explanation the other way around. I think the Manos Halevi says this, I don't remember, who says the other way around, that it means that now that he finds out that she's Jewish, and after all, he is an anti-Semite, now he starts talking to her with a Gemara, the opposite of what we're saying over here in the Gemara. Next, by Yomer LaEsther Amalka Mihuze. So he says to Esther Amalka, who is this that you're accusing? Vatoymer Esther, and she answers, Ish Tsar V'Oyev Homan Haro Hazeh. A troublesome, an enemy, a person who's troublesome and an enemy, this evil Haman. Now, why such a long expression? Amar Rav Elazar, Malama Choyse Mechava Klape Achashverosh, means she was actually pointing to Achashverosh. Uva Malach V'Sotter Yadra Klape Haman. A Malach came and pushed her hand to point to Haman, V'Omra Hazeh, and therefore she says Hazeh, because we know whenever it says Hazeh, Mara Be'etzboi V'Oim Hazeh. So she had actually wanted to say something about Achashverosh. Now a number of the Mephoshim ask, what was she thinking? I mean, she doesn't realize here she's trying to appease Achashverosh and get him to be on her side, and she's going to go accuse him to his face. So a couple of the Mephoshim talk about that what she means essentially is what she actually meant, and had she pointed to Achashverosh, she would mean that that Haman is trying to harm not only me, but also you. She'd be pointing to Achashverosh, in other words, as if to say, don't think the harm is only to me, it's also to you. But since that could be misinterpreted and she could lose her head for it, so therefore the Malach pushed her finger over so that there's not even the possibility of her being misunderstood. Different other Mephoshim talk about different possibilities, and there is even an explanation, again, I think from the Manoi Salevi, who says, she Taka knew she's risking her life doing that. But she figured that, you know what, maybe I'll get myself killed. I'll be, at least the Gzeda will be Batal, then it's worth it to risk my life for that. How would that be Mevatel Gzeda? So we talked about before that one of the Mephoshim points out, there's a Gemara in Tainis that tells that involving the Romans, and apparently the understanding is that the Persians had a similar thing, that when an important person in the government dies or is killed or whatever, then any pending zeiros are bottle. Like they consider it almost like it shows minashamayim that it's bad luck, that therefore we shouldn't continue with this. So if she had gotten herself killed, then she's figuring, according to the Menos HaLevi, that at least the zeiros will be bottle on the grounds of that kind of superstition. So she's willing to risk herself for that. The Maharal says another point on it. He says, look, you know, we're trying to save the Jewish people. You don't accomplish the Geula through lies. So she figured in that case, I got to tell the truth come what may. But the Malach came and pushed her hand away, so she doesn't have to do that. Next, the pasuk continues, V'hamalach kom v'chamosi v'gomer. So the king got up in his anger and went out to the garden. And then V'hamalach shtov m'ginas habisan. Then the pasuk continues, the king returned from the garden. Now, Marsha points out, the point that the Gemara is going to focus on is why does it have to say where he returned from? Obviously, if he went out to the garden, that's where he returned from. So it means makish shiva l'kima, means the posik is comparing the coming back to the getting up. Makima b'chema, when he got up from the party, he was angry. Af shiva b'chema, when he returned in, there was also something that happened outside that further provoked his anger. He saw in the garden there were malachi asharis who looked like people. They're standing over there, and they're pulling out, they're uprooting or chopping down the trees in the orchard. The shadu, and they're throwing them down. So that's what got him angry. Omalahu, Maya Vitchayu tells him, Maya Vitchayu, what do you think you're doing? Omrule, and they told him to Patin and Haman. Haman told us to do that. So that really aroused. So it's not even like this. He had gone out figuring that he'll cool off from his anger. Then he sees something over there that rouses his anger even more, thinking that Haman gave them instructions to chop down these trees. In fact, one explanation is, in fact, that they meant specifically that Iyun Yaakov points out that the next thing when Chavona says, Gam hineh yo'etz asher osa Haman, Chavona is implying, where do you think he got that tree from that he made the gallows out of? From the garden over here. So that really aroused Achashverosh's anger. So the pasuk says, so the Gemara continues, osa labayse. So Haman comes, I mean, Achashverosh comes back inside. So he comes back inside, still angry and even more angry. And as the pasuk continues, v'Haman noifel al hamita. Haman is falling on the bed. Now, what do you mean is falling? Nofal mi bo'ilei. Noifel implies an ongoing thing. It should be nofal. He fell onto the bed, onto the couch over there, and he's pleading with Esther for his life. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, malamach b'malach v'hipiloy aleha. Means a malach was throwing him down on her. So every time he's trying to get up, the malach is pushing him back down. So Achashverosh sees this. So Achashverosh says, "Vay mi dabra, vay mi mosa, oyvei from what's outside in the field, and oyvei of what's going on in the city." Or the other Girsa in the printed Gemara, "Vay mi besa, vay mi bara." There's a vay no matter where I go, in the house or outside. Meaning that's why it says, "Vay yomer hamelach, vay yomer." In other words, we darshin vay Omar. The king says, "Vay oyvei, no matter where I go, Haman is causing trouble over here." He asks, is he trying to overpower the queen with me in the house itself? And the pasuk continues, so then Chavona, one of the attendants, spoke up and he told about Haman's gallows. So Omer Rab Chama Rab Chanina or Rab Elazar, af Chavona harosha ba'isa etzahoya. Actually, Chavona was also involved in Haman's plot. We have, at the beginning of the Megillah, we have him as mentioned as one of Achashverosh's servants. He's one of the ones who was sent to fetch Vashti. So now, how does he know so much about Haman's plot? In particular, Marshall says, how would he know that's Gavoya Chamishim Amo? It's not something you could easily estimate just by looking at it. It must be that he was actually involved when they told him Yasu Eitz Gavoya Chamishim Amo, so he knows the actual height of it. But now that he sees that the table turned, Kibin Shirosh and the Sky Matsose, now that he saw it's not working out and Haman is in trouble, Yad Barach, so right away he became a turncoat and switched sides and ran away from Haman's plot and pretended like he's one of the good guys. Ah, so there is also the vort. There is the other vort. Yeah, the Gemara is not bringing over here. There is the other vort that it was Eliyahu. But the Gemara over here apparently is not taking that. He was still the same Rosha, but now he switched sides. There is, by the way, I mean, so when we say Vagam Chavona Zohar Latoiv, so yeah, there is the explanation that because he was Eliyahu, and we say Eliyahu Zohar Latoiv, so therefore we say that. But the other, according to the way the Gemara is saying over here, that it actually was Chavona himself, the vort is he's Zohar Latoiv in part because he spoke up at exactly the right time. Had he waited any longer, then Haman might have been able to get himself back in Achashverosh's good graces, like this one. Chavona speaks up right away, and Achashverosh is still furious over everything that just happened, then Tluhu Olav. So, yeah. In fact, this is Ion Yaakov says, we say v'gam charvona zohar latov, meaning it's particularly the word gam that makes him zohar latov. Why? Because in the Megillah, we have gam hineho etz asha'asa. What's the gam? So like we just said, Ion Yaakov explains that he's saying, also, here you just came in from outside where you see workmen chopping down the trees and they told you that Haman ordered that. This is also where Haman got his... what got his beam from for the gallows in the first place. So Gam, not only is ordering the destruction of your royal garden, but also he's trying to use it to hang Mordechai, and therefore that's the Gam that makes him Zohar Latov. That's what I'm saying. He's saying that he's accusing Haman that he stole a tree from your garden and used it to build his gallows. Yeah. It may be a lie. I don't know. I mean, we usually say that he took it from Noach's table, but maybe the Gemara over here, or at least the Ion Yaakov is understanding the Gemara, maybe to be different. Okay. Behind your dichtiv, this explains, this is like you have an apostolic in Eiv that describes what happens with a Rosha. The Yashlech Olav, Hashem throws on him the disaster, the Lo Yachmal, and Hashem has no Rachmanus on him, Mi Yodei Baroyach Yivrach. From his hand, they run away, meaning even all his hangers on and all of his co-conspirators and everything like Hiyo Chavona all run away from him when they see that disaster is coming on him. So we see that's exactly what happened over here, where even Chavona won't stick up for him and instead pretends like he was like he's the good guy all along. Okay. So the pasuk says Bachamasa Melech Shokocha. So the king's anger calmed down after they hanged him. Shtei Shchiches Halalu Lama. So why Shokocha? Usually the word in Tanakh, usually when you have the shirt, a shin chof chof or shin chof hey, whatever, means to calm down, like by a shirku amoyim, by the marble or whatever. Usually it's written with one chof. Earlier in the Megillah itself, you have kishoich kamas hamalach ha-shveresh. So why over here all of a sudden with two chofs, shoch chof? So it means echad shomalke shal olam ve'echad shalach ha-shveresh. It means two. There was a calmness from Hashem, the king of the world, that he now that the Rosh Haman has been removed from the world, so now Hashem is now Hashem's anger is calmed down, because the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, as long as Rishoyim are in the world, then there's anger of Hashem in the world. And when the Rishoyim are gotten rid of, then Hashem, so to speak, calms down. So there's that. Ve'echad shalach ha-shveresh, and one that ha-shveresh calmed down now that Haman is out of the picture. Ikadamri, or some say Echad Shal Esther, Echad Shal Vashti. Another explanation is both of them refer to Achashverosh, but one that he calmed down in over what happened to Vashti. So previously, Kishoy Hamas HaMalach Achashverosh, he had calmed down a little, but he was still upset all the years thinking back to what had happened. Now that Haman, who we said before is Memuchan, is finally hanged, and therefore he gets his just desserts for also having gotten Vashti killed. So now Achashverosh is completely appeased about that also. So there's a Shachacha about that as well. So now the Gemara is going to digress a little bit to talk about something involving Yosef and Binyamin, and that's going to relate back to something in the Megillah about when we have later on in Perek Ches, or Mordechai Yotzeb, Mifnei Melech, Bevush Malchus, etc. So this that we're going to talk about is going to relate to that. So the Pasuk says, so after Yosef has his reunion with his brothers in Parshas Vayigash, so the Pasuk says, L'cholam nosam lo'ish chalifos smolis v'gemer, each one of them he gave a suit of clothing, which helped make up for, Mephoshim point out, that like this, when the with the whole thing with the Gviya Kesef at the end of Parashas Miketz, by Yikru Simloisam, they ripped their garments in distress over what's happened. So now Yosef gave them new clothes to make up for that. And then all of Binyamin Nos and Ragomer, and then the Pasuk says he gave Binyamin 300 silver coins and five, a Chomish Chalifos Smolis, and five changes of clothes. So the question is, why is he showing favoritism to Binyamin? How is it possible that the Yaakov had made the same mistake in showing favoritism to Yosef, and now Yosef is going to repeat the mistake and show favoritism to Binyamin? Now Marsha points out, there's an obvious difference. Binyamin is his only full brother among all of them. All of them are equally well Yaakov's children, so there's a big difference. Of course, it's logical that he should show a little favoritism to Binyamin, who's his brother from his mother as well. However, Marisha, so there is that. Nevertheless, Marisha says the fact is he's trying now to remove any trace of sinah to them. Like this 22 years ago, they had such sinah to him that they sold him. Now Yosef is trying to appease them and make them realize we're all on the same side, etc. So still, what if they might be a twinge in their minds that might think, you know what, yes, on the one hand, he's his full brother and he didn't sell him. On the other hand, maybe because he's showing him favoritism because he didn't sell him, meaning, in other words, that he still resents us a little bit for the fact that we did. So why is Yosef doing that? And we know because of two sloyim's worth of melas, which is fine wool, which Yaakov gave Yosef more than his other children. Now the whole coat, Marsha says, doesn't mean that the whole coat weighed only two sloyim. A sella is about the size of a silver dollar, give or take. It's less than an ounce. So two sloyim would be less than 2 ounces. So we don't mean that the whole ksonis passim weighed less than that. There's a lot of explanations, b'chlal, what it means passim anyway. There's a half dozen different explanations among Midrashim and Mephoshim and all what the word passim means. One of them is it means the palms of the hands. So according to that, one vote is that it was a regular ksonis, like this. We always learn as kids that it was a striped, multicolored coat. But another way of looking at it is it was the same color as anybody else's, but it had extra special material, this melas material, around the sleeves where they're close to the hand. So that would be the extra two sloyim that Yaakov favored Yosef with that. And because of that, niskanu b'echad, because of that, his brothers got jealous of him. Nisgargal adaber, and one thing led to another. V'yodu avisenu l'mitzrayim, and our ancestors went down to Mitzrayim. Now, of course, Hashem had promised many years ago to Avram Avinu by the Bris Ben Absarim that it's going to happen, but still it didn't have to happen just yet. After all, the whole 400 years begins from Bris Ben Absarim. It didn't have to be that it is now. It didn't have to be in that way. There could have been other ways the Eibishter could have arranged it. It could have been that the Shibud wouldn't have been quite so harsh if it hadn't been for that. So now V'hodor Ovid Ihu Milsa B'Binyamin Kihechad Demakanu Be'achui. So now he's going to do something for Binyamin where his brothers are going to be jealous of him. Why would he do that? Ela, Amar Binyamin bar Yefes, Amar Abelazar, Remez Ramaz. The reason why he gave him the 5 changes of clothes. Now the 300 shekel we'll get back to in a minute, but the 5 changes of clothes, Remez Ramaz Loi, he was giving him without a Remez, Sha'osid Lotzis Mimenu Ben, Sheyetzim, Melefna Melech Bachamisha Levushay Malchus. Binyamin is going to have a descendant who is going to go out from in front of the king wearing five royal pieces of clothing. Umanu Mordechai, namely Mordechai, Dichtiva Mordechai Yatzim Lifnei HaMelech Hagomer, Bilvush Malchus, Peles, Vachur, Va'ateres Zahav Gdola, V'Sachlich Boots, V'Argamon. So 5 pieces of clothing, and therefore corresponding to that is why he gave Binyamin 5 suits. Now, Mephoshim asks the question, okay, how does that help though? So Marsha asks the question, okay, still don't you have the problem of the Kina? So the answer is, so Marsha says that, look, first of all, the Gemara is not even addressing the Shlosh Meis Kesef. So, you can understand. He's giving, everybody would understand. He is giving Binyamin more because after all, he is his full brother. But when it comes to money, that they're not going to be so jealous of, Marsha says, because after all, money is not something that you carry around exposed all the time. You keep it hidden. So fine, he wants to give him a present that he's going to keep hidden, then fine, big deal. But he's giving him begodim, where everybody's going to see that he now has extra suits that he didn't give his brothers. So it's going to look like he's showing favoritism because Binyamin didn't sell him and showing the lack of that to them because they did sell him and that would cause kina. And therefore the Gemara is saying that he did it as a remnant. Still, Mephoshim say, still, how does that help? The fact is, The fact is, it's still going to cause kina. So there's an answer given, an answer that a couple of them before should give. It's brought from the Vilna Gaon, it's brought from the Bin Hillel and others, that the five suits that he gave Binyamin were cheaper. They were cheaper material or cheaper make or whatever than the ones he gave to the brothers. So altogether, it adds up in value to the same as the one suit that he gave each of them, but it was five for this remez. In fact, the Torah Tmima brings on an interesting point. In the Pasuk, the word when it says he gave the suits to his brother, he gave a suit to each of his brothers, it says Khalif Pois spelt Mole with the Vav before the Sof. When it says by Binyamin that he gave him Chomish Khalifois Smolis, there the word Khalifois is written without the Vav, indicating that they were lesser garments. So therefore there's something missing from them. What about the 300 Sloyim? So Maharsha says, okay, they're not going to be jealous of that because it's hidden. There is a different verge on it also that the Gemara tells us in Gittin that if a person sells his Eved Knani to a Goy, and he's not allowed to do that after all, because an Eved Knani is chayev in some mitzvahs, then he's chayev to, the Chachamim are chayev him to redeem him, to buy him back from the Goy, even if it takes 10 times the value. Now, we know the average value of an Eved is 30 Sloyim. That's why we have in Parshas Mishpatim that if somebody's ox kills an Eved Knani or Shifra Knanis, then you have to pay a Knas of 30 Sloyim. So therefore, the average value of an Eved would be 30. Yosef himself was sold for 20. That's a different matter. But anyway, the point is, therefore, and since the Gemara says, since the Gemara says that a person is penalized midrabanan, he has to pay as much as 10 times the value of the Eved to buy him back from the Goy. Now, they had sold Yosef to the Goyim. Therefore, by rights, each of them should have to pay a knas of 300 selah. Instead of taking that 300 sloyim from each one of them, instead Yosef gives that amount to Binyamin. In effect, each of them has been deprived of that amount. He's penalizing them for what they did, but nevertheless, it's not going to cause kinah, because after all, they do realize that they deserve that knas. There's a vote on that. That's why he gave Binyamin the 300 sloyim. Although again, Maharsha is saying that it wasn't an issue for a different. Reuven wasn't directly involved in the sale, but nevertheless, first of all, they gave him his portion when he showed up. But still, he had told them to throw Yosef in the pit. Binyamin Bechlal wasn't involved at all. Binyamin was much younger than all the brothers, and he was Bechlal at home at the time. But Reuven at least was involved to some extent. Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola. Kesvavo Debez. So we know that in Yemosa Mashiach, when we finish the Avodah of refining the good from the evil and we reach the Shlemos that we had before the Chetetz Adas, there will still be Ra in the world at that point in the first stage of Yemosa Mashiach. But it'll be a point when the Ra is completely separated from the Tov. Again, like it was before the Chetetz Adas, there was Ra in the world represented by the Nachash, but it was separated from the Tov. Only after the Chetetz Adas did they get mixed together. Now, then you have the second stage of Yemos HaMashiach, the Olam HaTchiyah, the world of Tchiyas HaMesim, which comes after Yemos HaMashiach, then Ra will be completely removed from the world. How can Ra exist without any Tov in it? It's a good question. I don't know. I guess, again, the same way as it did before the Chetetz Adas. You don't have Shvira Sakelim yet. You don't have. So how did it exist then? I don't know. I guess there has to be some hors d'oeuvre. I don't know. Yeah. I guess, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Continuing with Halachas of Shabbos. Whenever you're not allowed to do something in general on Shabbos, in general, you're not allowed to have it done by a goy as well. So here are some exceptions. If it's winter time and you need the heat on, so he gives the example where you would use the oven to heat up the house. So then what you might have is, for example, that a goy might put the cold food on top of the oven and then fire up the oven, because now he's not meaning to warm up the food. He's using it to warm up the house. So yesh matirin. So some say such a thing is mutter, but only if he puts the food there beforehand, not after. And then if obviously you're only doing it to warm up the food, then of course it would be also. Now, yesh oisrim, he goes on to say, even if the purpose is only to warm up the house, then yesh oisrim even that. And then a baal nefesh should be careful about that where it's not so necessary. And then he goes on to talk about different kinds of ovens in that regard. So to put it in modern terms, in other words, you can't generally have the goy turn on the heat on Shabbos or turn on the air conditioning on Shabbos. You have sometimes in certain cases when you have a choy l'shein b'sakona in the house or different other possibilities like that, then you have certain haterim for it. But it's not quite so simple. People sometimes have the notion that as long as you go, first of all, we're talking about over here telling the goy to. If you're hinting to him is another matter, but not necessarily a lot of people have the idea that hinting to him is, you know, that there are ways of hinting to him that are not necessarily so oyskalten. Many years ago, I had a neighbor actually who was trying to hint to his neighbor the way he was hinting to him, which would be mutter, for example, is he's telling him it's very warm in my house, without anything further, and it takes the guy a long time to chapsif that it means, and I need it to be cooled down, and I need to turn on the air conditioner. But yeah.